Late one cold February evening in the Ligurian city of San Remo, a person in a hoodie and a manatee alien costume whispers in the ear of his fellow performer, an Italian rapper named Galli. They're on a stage in front of 3,000 audience members. A further 14 million people are watching at home. They have just performed for the last time this week. Galli listens intently and repeats into the mic the short Italian phrase that we can all surely understand.
Stop al genocidio.
This was the finale of San Remo Music Festival 2024, also known simply as San Remo. The week-long annual song contest on Italian television, popular in its own right, it also serves as the selection event for Italy's Eurovision song entry each year. After the finale, Galli was accused of exploiting current events for attention by the Israeli ambassador to Italy. But he would later confirm on Sunday variety show Dominica Inn that he has a history of supporting the Palestinian people that goes back further than October 2023, and has always been a political performer. He notably got in trouble for calling former Interior Minister Matteo Salvini a fascist. After Galli left Dominica Inn, the host read a statement of heartfelt and staunch solidarity with the people of Israel and the Jewish community, from Roberto Sergio, CEO of RAI, Italy's national broadcaster. Shortly afterwards, pro-Palestinian protests erupted across 16 Italian cities, including violent repression from the police in Naples and protesters throwing glass bottles and smoke bombs at RAI's regional offices in Milan, Galli's hometown. If you watch the San Remo final on RAI's online streaming service, Galli's protests has now been edited out. This is an illustrative example of the tension building around the Eurovision Song Contest this year, as people, artists, fans, NGOs, and performers all call for Israel's exclusion from the contest while national broadcasters, the event's organizers, and decision-makers plug their ears and do their best to pretend everything is normal. Inspired directly by San Remo Music Festival, Eurovision was founded in 1956, 5 years after San Remo started, and has been held every year since, except in 2020, due to COVID. While the competition has changed a lot since its early days, the basic concept has stayed the same. Simply put, roughly 40 countries submit an original song to be performed live on a big stage in May. Each country holds a public vote, and a panel of industry experts who award points to all other countries performing. You cannot vote for your own country. This format and history resulted in the post-facto myth that Eurovision is a contest that exists to foster peace between the nations of post-war Europe. A similar myth is extended to other post-war institutions like the EU and NATO. People are very happy to believe this, but in reality the first Eurovision was mostly a technical flex. Live television broadcasting was still a young technology in 1956, and the idea of broadcasting one show across multiple countries simultaneously and on multiple channels was ambitious. It also incredibly cost-effective. Despite the abundance of sequins, lasers, and elaborate light shows for most broadcasters, Eurovision has a much lower cost per hour of television than your run-of-the-mill soap opera. While the idea of peace in Europe being sustained through a song competition, without which the region would descend into the purge, is amusing, it is worth noting that during the Eurovision's 68-year run, the continent has seen a great deal of violence. Turkey joined the contest 1 year after invading Cyprus. Azerbaijan participated in 2021, while Armenia was forced to withdraw for a year because of the Second Nagorno-Karabakh War. Russia participated during the Russo-Georgian War, and after the annexation of Crimea. Not to mention the invasions of countries outside of Europe, partaken by Eurovision members, such as the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. Despite Eurovision's reputation as tacky, trivial, and fundamentally unserious, propagated mostly by the British because they keep losing, it remains one of the most watched live television events in the world, with ratings higher than the Super Bowl. Live screenings in pubs and watch parties with friends are commonplace. Even those who roll their eyes at the idea of it for 364 days of the year can end up watching the final on that one Saturday evening in May. Countries who take the competition seriously usually send songs that reach number one in their national charts. This is the competition that produced ABBA, Celine Dion, and more recently, Maneskin. Musicians better known abroad than the competition that propelled them into the limelight. As an authority on the subject, I'm a podcaster, you're welcome, I do believe the Eurovision represents some of the best of modern Europe. Not because of lofty ideas of peace and love, but because the Europe of classical architecture, old world sophistication, tradition and legacy never resonated with me. Eurovision's bright lights, pageantry, fake tan and loud beats with A2 English lyrics remind me more of the Europe I grew up with. A Europe of underage drinking in front of your town's rinky-dink fun fair, with Gigi D'Agostino for some reason blaring in the background. So Eurovision is a pretty big deal, but is it more important than solidarity with the Palestinian people? No. Don't be stupid. Since I identify with the subsection of the population that starts thinking about the Eurovision in January, and not like a week before it starts, as do normal people, I have been watching the European Broadcasting Union, Eurovision's governing body, flounder as this issue of Israel grows ever more awkward for them. They rely on a handful of talking points to dismiss any criticism of Israel's continued participation, outlined below. 1. Passing the buck. The EBU originally claimed that it was not in a position to kick Israel out of the competition. While not technically true, the EBU is very much an organization that draws its legitimacy from the national broadcasters that make up its membership. In 2022, after the invasion of Ukraine, the EBU publicly stated that Russia could take part if it wanted to, and only kicked them out after the national broadcasters of Eastern Europe and the Netherlands threatened to withdraw from the competition. This gets even more farcical when you take the complaint that Israel should not participate to national broadcasters, like SVT, RTL, RTE, and BBC, because they will claim that it's the EBU's decision and theirs alone. This results in a lovely little feedback loop where no one has to take responsibility. 2. But it's never been done. We have two recent examples of countries being kicked from the competition, Russia and Belarus. Eurovision fans and pro-Palestinian activists are drawing comparisons between expelling Israel and the expulsion of Russia in 2022. The EBU's official rationale for excluding Russia was Russia's inclusion could bring the competition into disrepute, which is likely kept intentionally vague so as not to set the precedent that launching an invasion is grounds for kicking you out. The real difference between now and 2022 is institutional support. Support for kicking Israel out has come from fans, musicians, current and past Eurovision participants, while support for kicking out Russia, while including a degree of public and artist support, came primarily from national broadcasters and was in line with the European government policies on isolating Russia. Without the official backing, banning Israel from the contest is an uphill battle. All civilian death and international law violation comparisons between Israel and Russia, no matter how reasonable those comparisons are, can get ignored. The circumstances of Belarus's suspension, however, might serve as a more viable template for Israel's suspension. One would think that Belarus got suspended along with Russia for supporting the invasion of Ukraine, but they actually got suspended for 3 years in 2021 for their national broadcaster, BTSC, violating EBU rules around impartiality and independence from their government. Activists have pointed to the manner in which the Israeli national broadcaster, Kan, has covered the actions of the IDF in Gaza, as grounds for the exclusion from the EBU and thus Eurovision. While there's a fair amount of evidence to support this assertion, for those seeking justice for the Palestinian people, it does feel akin to getting Al Capone for tax evasion. Some more erudite Eurovision fans might feel compelled to bring up the Eurovision's no politics rule, to which I say, like a complete asshole, what are politics? Okay, sure, it seems like an obtuse question, but I swear it's relevant. In reality, the no politics rule is a joke. The EBU can point to a handful of examples indicating they take it seriously, such as Georgia's banned post-Russo-Georgian War entry entitled We Don't Wanna Butt In. But the EBU has always had a limited definition of politics, and what it does consider political is hazy enough for plausible deniability with some exploitable loopholes. In general, if the EBU considers something morally good, it's not political. Obviously, this will include songs about peace, stopping war, vaguely defined, or in a more specific case, the two songs submitted in 1990 that referred to the fall of the Berlin Wall. The EBU also does not consider the personal political. Ukraine won in 2016 with Jamala's 1944, a half-English, half-Crimean Tatar song about the deportation of Crimean Tatars in the 1940s. The lyrics are vague, but do not explicitly refer to modern Crimea, although Jamala noted that 1944 is not only about the past. Since Jamala's great-grandmother was deported in the 1940s, her song was allowed to participate because the song was personal.
When strangers are coming, they come to your house, they kill you all and say, we're not killed, not killed. Where is your mind? Humanity cries.
There also seems to be an unwritten, just don't be obvious rule, which Georgia's 2009 entry was in violation of. However, you can push the rule pretty far if you want, such as Armenia's 2015 entry, Face the Shadow. You have to be someone who's just heard of Armenia to not understand what six Armenians on stage singing a chorus of Don't Deny over and over is in reference to. They were allowed to participate upon the EBU's request, changing the name of the song from Don't Deny. I haven't even mentioned Eurovision's relationship to LGBT plus visibility and rights, which could be its own article. The 1961 winner Luxembourg's Nous les Amoureux was a song about two lovers whose love was threatened. After the singer, Jean-Claude Pascal, came out, he confirmed that the song was about two men. The lyrics managed to not reference the gender of the lovers, a remarkable feat in 1960s French. More recently, Finland's 2013 entry, Marry Me, was read as a protest song in favour of legalisation of same-sex marriage, which Finland would legalise in 2017. It was fun watching people at home slowly realise that the woman singing the imperative, Marry Me, of the chorus was not directed at a man, but at the state. In recent years, we've seen the number of political entries increase. Croatia's absurdist anti-Putin entry, Mama Šić, the Czech Republic's pro-Ukrainian sovereignty song, My Sister's Cram, and my personal favourite, Serbia's Incorpore Sano, about how musicians as freelancers are excluded from public health insurance options, including the singer's former bandmate, who died of a treatable form of cancer. The line, "God grant us health, because I don't have insurance," gets me every time. The atmosphere this year is no different. Second place in Ireland's national selection was a song about not being able to speak Irish anymore. Croatia's entry this year is an Eastern European brain drain anthem, and Galli's song, Casa Mia, with its lyrics about greener grass, bluer skies, and bombed hospitals, is a bit on the nose. Even if Israel is kicked out or withdrawn, we are likely to see Israeli-Luxembourgish entry Tali Gourlagant act as a proxy. She dedicated her victory in Luxembourg to her brother currently in the IDF. And the participation of Palestinian musician Bashir Mahmoud in Iceland's national final was campaigned against. This is just the performers and songs. The contest itself has always been political. The EBU, along with the hosting national broadcaster, have organized performances that occur while votes are being tallied. These range from drag acts to performances from past winners, but have also included dance routines depicting the plight of refugees and the trauma inflicted upon the recent wave of refugees from the invasion of Ukraine. So why the hell wouldn't our escape? Being done about it. The EBU's insistence that Israel participate is already causing small acts of protest. Galli's comments at San Remo were not the only ones at the final. Another finalist, Dargan D'Amico, called for the ceasefire after his performance. This comment was also subsequently censored from RAI's streaming version. A person rushed the stage at Norway's national selection show, Melodi Grand Prix, on live Norwegian television, with a Palestinian flag and a t-shirt reading, "Boycott Israel." We're likely to see these small acts of protest continue in May. There's already been reports of heightened security for the Eurovision final directly attributed to, quote, events in the Middle East, end quote. And because this year's host city, Malmo, is considered a pro-Palestinian city in Sweden. Potential performers have claimed they will not attend if Israel is allowed to participate, or will lobby the EBU to kick them out. Former participants and thousands of musicians from Finland, Iceland, and Sweden have called for Israel to be excluded. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions called for the expulsion of Israel. When that failed, March 2nd, they called for a boycott of the song competition. Eurovision journalists have either intentionally limited their coverage of Israel in Eurovision 2024, or have dealt with the EBU's hypocrisy head-on and received death threats. Letter-writing campaigns have been directed at national broadcasters, the EBU, the performers, and sponsors. Alternative boycott-friendly watch parties are being organized, such as one in Berlin, organized by myself, with all fundraising going directly to Medical Aid Palestine. It is impossible to keep politics out of this contest. Banning Russia was a political move, and the shows of sympathy and support to Ukraine by performers, and even the event organizers themselves, was a political act. An act that, as far as I can tell, have been appreciated by viewers and fans. However, if Russia can get banned for an invasion, and Belarus can get banned for media repression, but Israel can remain, the EBU is sending a pretty clear signal that Palestinian lives don't matter.
Siobhan has a another poem for us. Thank you.
This is a poem by Khaled Juma, and it's called Oh Rascal Children of Gaza. Oh rascal children of Gaza, you who constantly disturb me with your screams under my window, you who filled every morning with rush and chaos, you who broke my vase and stole the lovely flower on my balcony, come back and scream as you want and break all the vases, steal all the flowers, come back, just come back.
Thank you, Bob.
Hey, welcome to Only Mr. God Knows, episode zero. What you just heard there was me reading an article I wrote for Left Berlin. There'll be a link in the description if you're at all interested or want to click any of the links that I reference. This episode is mostly just to kind of catch up a little bit on the boycott and talk about what we're going to be doing this Eurovision season in a bit more detail. The message, I understand, has been a little chaotic about what we're planning to do because we had to change some things on the fly. I personally didn't think a boycott was coming very early on in the year, but yeah, it is. Yeah, so just straight off the bat, Only Mr. God Knows as a miniseries will be happening as this is episode zero. For facilitating people listening to the songs this year, I have created a document that you can view that is a list of where to watch all this stuff in a boycott-friendly way. Lots of musicians have uploaded their songs to their personal channels on things like YouTube, including music videos and stuff, so you can listen to the songs that way. And if that doesn't exist, which it does for some of the artists, you can use a platform called Invidious, which is a privacy-first version, like mirror of YouTube, that doesn't record any of your views and thus doesn't contribute to any kind of like monetization. The boycott that has been called basically calls for not participating with the Eurovision itself. So no watching the Eurovision YouTube channel. Do not watch the show on the night. That's either the two semifinals and the final. What we will be doing at Eurovision is providing a alternative where I will be downloading the music videos in a boycott-friendly way, and we will be going through the songs on the night. Everyone who comes to the show will be a juror. We will be asking you for your top 10, and you know your number one will get 12 points, your number two will get 10 points, etc. Then there will also be broadcast on twitch.tv/cornishbeatty, where we will be... the people in the chat, people watching on Twitch, will act as a televote. And that's how that's going to work. Any money raised from the Twitch stream, any money that we've made from selling tickets in advance, there's still some tickets left, although more than half are gone at this point. As well as, like, there will be some tickets sold on the night at the door. Even if we sell out all the tickets at Eventbrite, the link is in the description, because there's limited capacity, there will be room for another 10 people on the actual night itself. It'll be €20 for a ticket on Eventbrite or €20 in at the night. And all that money as well will be going to Medical Aid Palestine. Any money made on the Twitch, Medical Aid Palestine. Hoping maybe to set up a proper merch store. But that's a bit up in the air at the moment, unfortunately. Yeah, so there'll also be a donation bucket if you want to make further donations to Medical Aid Palestine. There's also a bar where the bar sales will also be going to Medical Aid Palestine, so that's pretty cool. Yeah. But, again, this is... Only Mr. God Knows this year is very
you know, very much insisting, do not watch the actual Eurovision. I will be doing my usual thing. I'll have some guests, some fun guests, to kind of talk about the songs this year, and give us kind of their thoughts about it. Again, watching it all in a boycott-friendly way. And yeah, don't watch the actual competition itself. Watch our alternative on twitch.tv/cornerspading. I also want to talk thank Liad, a Israeli activist based here in Germany, who is also a Eurovision fan and acted as a sounding board and gave me a lot of advice on the article that I wrote. She's really great. And one of the pieces of advice she gave me is to not make things too current. When I was writing this, the situation was changing quite rapidly. When I started writing it, the boycott from BDS was not official. And then by the time that I was ready to submit it, it became official. For those who haven't caught up about what's happened, we talked a little bit about it on our appearance on Chapo Trap House, but, you know, not everyone listened to that. So, yeah, what can I say? On March 2nd, context, it kind of looked like Israel was trying to get themselves kicked out of the competition for technicality. They kept submitting songs that were political, expressly political, and would be naturally told, this is too political, go change this. Israel, or any country that does this, gets infinite tries, retries to submit a new song as long as they meet the deadline, which was the middle of March. The thing that happened, though, was we all kind of thought they were doing that because it was best of both worlds. The EBU would get to kick Israel out of the competition without, you know, looking like they've made a decision and pissing off things like the German national broadcaster. But Israel also got to look like, you know, kind of persecuted. And I think a lot of people at the Israeli national broadcaster can realize that this is probably going to be a very bad spectacle for them. Yeah. So they were trying to pull out until on March 2nd, when it looked like Iceland was about to send an Icelandic Palestinian artist, Bashar Mahmoud, who you heard his song Wild Wild West, which is very obviously about coming from Palestine to the Wild Wild West, was looking like Iceland was going to send them. So apparently the president of Israel, Herzog, intervened and said, cop on, send the lyrics that are not political or, you know, meet the criteria. And that's where we get Israel's entry this year called Hurricane, which is a revamped and reworked version of their originally overly political submission, October Rain. Yeah, so they did that. They're now being allowed in. As soon as that happened, BDS called for the unofficial boycott. And yeah, since writing this article, other things have happened. You know, Malmo is getting ready to host the competition. There are signs everywhere. Blood is being thrown on them. I didn't mention it in the article, but now there's like a huge list of Norwegian musicians who have also signed. The Slovenian national broadcaster has basically said, hey, we want an official and public inquiry into why Cannes as a national broadcaster is allowed to participate, because they are, I mentioned the Belarus kind of like impartiality rules that they're constantly breaking. And we've got like polling coming out of Iceland that like Icelandic people, like by a pretty like stark majority, do not want to participate in the Eurovision this year. Most of the musicians who said they would do something that are, or most of the entries who were saying they were going to do something, haven't really done anything yet, but you know, their mics are hot for the entirety of the competition. So I won't be watching the final, but I will be paying attention to like Eurovision reporting Twitter and stuff like that, because I suspect a handful of people are going to use their moment of when they usually say something along the lines of, thank you, Europe, to say something along the lines of, from the river to the sea. So, yeah, it's going to be kind of a mess. But yeah, we here at Cornish Beatty are going to try make this as fun as it can be and keep in line with the boycott. And yeah, that's where we are at the moment. So yeah, solidarity. I will see you. Well, only Mr. God knows.